Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
You know, I've been rethinking how I style the smallest spaces in my house this summer. Instead of stressing over what won't fit, I've been looking at tons of versatile styles from Bob's Discount Furniture that actually multitask. Whether you're working from home or hosting guests, take that Betty dining set, for example. When it's just me, it's a compact, space-saving setup with a super comfy Bobapedic seats. But it extends in a snap when company arrives. It comes in four fun colors, boasts over 1,500 five-star reviews, and at just $5.99 for a seven-piece set, you'll actually have a budget left for the dinner party. And if you love that retro chic vibe, they also have the Betty Bedroom Set featuring gorgeous felt-lined storage drawers and another 1,500 five-star reviews. Or if you just want to lounge, check out the Phantom Power Reclining Sofa. It's packed with cup holders, charging ports, and Bobapedic cushions without taking over your whole living room. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture. Enjoying the World Cup? If you want proper analysis, honest opinions, and plenty of laughs along the way, give The Rest Is Football a listen. Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, and Micah Richards break down the biggest games, the standout moments, and everything happening on and off the pitch with brilliant guests joining them throughout the tournament. Whether you followed football your whole life or you're just getting into it, they'll help you make sense of the drama, the tactics, the joy, and the heartbreak of the World Cup. Listen to The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to another summer edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel on the show as always. And as we dive into the first time on the defensive side of the football, it is, yes, a continuation of our position by position and player by player breakdown for the Oregon roster as they head into the month of June. We're now in the middle of June, which means fall camp is just about 6 weeks away from opening up. So it's an important period of time of, A, collecting your rest and getting your body right, mind right for the season ahead. And also it's that last push, really, of improvement. And whether it's skill or whether it's your body composite and getting yourself ready for the grind of the college football season. And with that, we're going to dive into the Oregon defensive line. It's a unit in which, Eric, I think expectations probably, if we're going to look at anyone, it's probably this position group has the highest expectation, has the highest standard to anyone else on this roster, maybe quarterback too, just because of Dante Moore. But from top to bottom, this unit has a ton of expectations because all four starters are back. You could probably make a case all four starters are day two picks at minimum. You can make a strong case that they probably have one or two first-round draft picks on this unit. And it's they are so loaded up front in the starting rotation that basically over half a majority of their backups, their primary backups, left because they want to play and they couldn't wait another year. That's how good this group should be, and that's how good this group should be viewed upon by those outside the program.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's not just they have the four guys back, it's that they all had options to go to the NFL. And, yes. and I've done some, you know, summer radio stuff, and that's how nationally people are framing this, is it reminds them a lot of that Ohio State year in 2024 where JTT came back and a couple of those other defensive linemen that were so integral to that success and that defense decided, like, hey, we didn't achieve what we wanted to. We could jump into the NFL. We're going to come back because we want to win a championship. And it worked out there, right? It doesn't always work out that way. Penn State had a similar kind of rallying call or rallying cry, I guess maybe I should say, last year. And we know how that played out. And I think Oregon, frankly, played a big role in the way that thing kind of, you know, began to tear apart and fall apart. But this is supposed to be the core of this defense, right? And it's a group that has a lot of individuals that we think really highly of. It's also a group that I think pretty objectively has some growth that's needed, right? Like, in terms of being disruptive, I just pulled this up before we jumped on here, Matt. 69th nationally in sacks per game, 97th in tackles for loss per game. Those are not numbers that are reflective of an elite defense, which Oregon was at times, it felt like last year. And frankly, at other times felt very, very, I would say very far below that threshold. So, you know, I think it's a fun group to talk about because, yes, they all had these expectations. They're all clearly very talented. Individually, they had great moments, some more than others. But collectively, you still can look at the data here and say they're not where they needed to be last year. And that should be the driving kind of force behind this offseason, is they got to become significantly more disruptive on defense. And right, and you pick those two stats, sacks and tackles for loss, because those are usually kind of attributed to your fronts on defense here. But like this was a pretty far step back. Like, they were 46th in tackles for loss in 2024, and they were 16th in sacks in 2024. So this was a group that was top 20, top 50 kind of range in the year before. And then last year really, really fell back a little bit. So to me, when I look at this group, I think it's important to start there of like, yes, everyone's back, but there's also pretty clearly room for getting better.
The sacks and the pressures is going to be the area of focus, like you said, for this group. And I think up front, they've got the pieces here to exponentially grow those numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think some of it's also out of respect to these four guys. We can't hold the ball for very long, because if we do, we increase the chances of pressures and sacks, which lead to more opportunities for turnovers. But nonetheless, like, you can make excuses for all you want for why sacks were down. They need to be better. It doesn't really matter what the scheme that was being run against. It's not a new concept. Teams with loaded fronts have faced this every year. And some teams figure it out. Some teams do not. And for Oregon, that's going to be the challenge for this top group, is figure out how to create more pressures with the double teams, with the quick snaps and all of that nature. Let's start on the edge here. We'll go Mateo Uiagalelei. Your number one player overall going into the 2025 season. He has dropped significantly going into the 2026 season after, I don't want to call it a disappointing year, but his production was down from the year before. And I think it was fair to say that going into the year, much like when we did the offensive line talking with Poncho at this Oregon starting center, there was probably a high likelihood that Mateo would be gone after last season and would not be on the 2026 roster. He now is. That's great for Oregon. That's great for Mateo. But there needs to be growth here. And this is the one guy I think we probably are saying, if anyone needs to create more pressures, you need to get back to where you were in 2024 when you were one of the top sack producers in the Big Ten nationally, and see if you can replicate that again.
Yeah, and we know that player is there, which is why there's still so much enthusiasm, and why, you know, when I put together my updated top 50 list, or top 30, I think it was top 30 actually, a couple months ago, I had Mateo at 10, even though production-wise, you could have made a case there were some players behind him who would maybe belong ahead of him. I think one of the pushbacks here, and I'll make it both from a team perspective and then a Mateo perspective, is like there are multiple, like, I guess, objective truths in this, right? Like, there's the counting stats, which tell you one thing. I think maybe this is more of a subjective truth. And then there's like the PFF marks, which tell you something different. Like, PFF says Oregon had the 12th best pass rush in the country last year. Again, that didn't bear out with the stats where they're 69th in tackles, or sorry, sacks, and 97th in tackles for loss. You look at Mateo in particular, like, he was by far the most impactful player on this defense from a defensive pressure perspective. He had 14 more total pressures than Tatum Tuioti, who had, I believe, 4 more sacks. So, you know, some of this is just a case of, like, he had 38 hurries on the season, which are not contact with the quarterback plays, but you speed the play up. This is based upon PFF data. That's up significantly from the year previous. So there is a case of like, yeah, he didn't get home as much, but it, based upon some of the grades and some of the marks, like he also, like all of his PFF marks are up from 2024 and 2025. So some of that, I think it's worth bringing up both sides of this coin here of like, I think he probably played better than I gave him credit for, than some of the fans gave him credit for last year. But at the end of the day, like there are these objective truths, which is he did not get home to the degree that was necessary for this group to be, you know, be as productive as a pass rushing unit. So he can get better. He was already probably playing better than we think it is. I'll be curious to see if like there is quote unquote like statistical regression back to what he looked like in 2024. And like, would it surprise you, Matt, if we look up and Mateo has like 12 or 13 sacks in 2024?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not. I will not be surprised in one manner if he shows up and is dominant and is like a 15 sack producer over 16 or 17 games in a college football season like that. And if he does, that probably means Oregon's defense is highly successful.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And we should note a couple of things here, and this maybe is a good tie into our next name on this list, but the school record for sacks in season is 13. And the top 10 career leaderboard starts at 19, which may surprise you. Kayvon Thibodeau is on there. Both Mateo and Tatum are going to be on this list, assuming they have like very moderate production as seniors in 2026. So these are two of the more productive sack players this school has ever produced. And I wouldn't be surprised. Like, let's say Mateo, let's put it this way, Matt, like, we're all kind of down on Mateo, his junior season, what wasn't what we anticipated it might be. I think the conversation shifts a lot. Like he's at 18 and a half sacks today. 19 yep. gets him on that list. If he hits 12 sacks, he's the school record holder. Like that's all it would take. So put that into perspective when you look at Mateo and kind of his career here of it might be a case where we look back and say, man, he only had that 6 sack season as a junior, but he doubled that total as a senior, and he's the school's all-time sack leader. Like, that is very much on the table when we talk about this player.
Moving to the other spot on that side of the football, the defensive tackle spot, Amari Washington, really, really good season going into 2025. Started all 15 games, incredibly disruptive player. I think the word consistency is probably a big reason why he came back of – you could be really good. You could be special. You could be top 10 good at the NFL draft, but you just didn't do it consistently. Show us that you can now. Played in 14 games for the Ducks, no starts in 2024. Played in 8 games in 2023. And his position coach, Tony Tuioti, Oregon's defensive line coach, has basically been saying since 2023 that they felt like Amari Washington has first-round NFL draft traits and his potential is through the roof. And he said it for almost 2 years, and I think Amari Washington backed that up. Even with the lack of consistency at times during 2025, had he gone pro, had he elected to leave school up with just 1 year of starting experience, I think he's picked in the second round. He's picked in maybe at the end of the first round. He comes back. It's a big feather in Oregon's cap. They have probably one of the best offensive linemen now in the country, or defensive linemen now in the country, and it's all about just, can you had a really good year? Can you go from good to truly elite?
Yeah, and for him, I'm happy you nailed it with consistency. This is like the quickest off the snap interior lineman I've seen Oregon maybe ever have. Like he is like there are times where I'm surprised he's not flagged for like encroachment because he is just he reads it and he jumps and he's so explosive and his reaction time is so fast and that creates all these moments. And then there are other times where if he doesn't get that advantage, he's maybe kind of not very impactful. Right. Like, and so maybe consistency is not entirely what it is, but it's more like if he's not able to get that initial advantage on some of these plays, he maybe doesn't have all the counters to then correct and find another way to have success. But you can't really teach whatever they're going to list him at this fall. And it's, you know, last year, what was about 6'5", 320 pounds. With that kind of athleticism, it's just very, very unusual. Or, I mean, Oregon had a first round interior lineman the year before in Derek Harmon. I'd take Amari Washington's physical traits in terms of that explosiveness off the snap and getting to the quarterback over what we saw from Harmon. And the case. The other argument here, though, is like we need to see more production. You know, 4.5 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks last year, 15 games played, a ton of snaps. Again, PFF grades are through the roof, 80, one of the best interior linemen in the country, certainly in the Big Ten a year ago. But can he get more sacks? Can he be more impactful? I think the answer is obviously a resounding yes. And I think really of the names we're going to talk about as returning starters, and maybe you know, maybe you disagree, but my feeling really is that the highest ceiling of these guys is Washington. And I think there's the highest like growth potential to go from being a really, really good player last year to I wouldn't be surprised if he has an elite senior season and you're talking about him not only as a first round pick, but like maybe this guy belongs in the top 10, top 15 range just because of some of the things he can do. Cause there's some elite athleticism here with this player.
Yes, absolutely agreed. I 100% am on board with you. This guy has probably still the highest ceiling of the group. Another one that I think actually has a high ceiling is his fellow counterpart in the interior is Bear Alexander. He returned to Oregon as well. He's playing his third school, played previously with Georgia, then went to USC, redshirted during the 2024 season with the Trojans after playing a couple games, came to Oregon this past year with a lot of question marks of, and fair or not, about his drive, his commitment to the game. Can he play consistent football? Can he live up to high expectations? And I think one of the resounding things of the reporting that we saw around him at other schools and his time now again at Oregon is the people that are in the room with him don't have those doubts, don't have those question marks. It's those outside the room that don't see the full picture. And sometimes, in some cases, it's unfortunate. Guys get labeled with high expectations and they need time to develop and they need time to figure out what works. And that happened during the 2025 season for Bear Alexander, turned into a tremendous player, 12 starts, 15 games total played, was one of Oregon's best defensive guys, just regardless of position. And again, another guy that had the opportunity to get drafted in the NFL, but chose to return.
Yeah. You know, we talk about, and we've used this term and a buddy of mine brought it up to me. And I keep using it. But Oregon being like a quarterback rehabilitation center. We talk about Dante Moore. We talk about potentially what Dylan Raiola can be. You can go back to Bo Nix. Clearly that was like the first example of like, he was kind of floundering at Auburn, goes to Oregon, resets his career. He's now an NFL starting quarterback and somebody who had a chance to win a Super Bowl last year, if not for a stinking injury. But I think we can also talk about that at other positions. And I think Bear Alexander is a great example of that. Like he and Malik Benson a year ago were probably the two players that came in with like, hey, we know there's a lot of talent, a lot of potential here, but for whatever reason, it hasn't worked out at these previous two stops. And they've been at big schools where there's been a lot of spotlight and they just haven't made it work. And for both of them to really break through last year was really, I think, a sign of what Oregon can do with players like this, right? And why they are an attractive transfer destination, not just at quarterback, but at other spots. And, you know, I think Bear through maybe the first 8 games of the season last year, clearly the better player than Amari in terms of yes. production. And then it shifted. I thought Amari really took it up a level and was better maybe the back half. But there was a time here a year ago where I was going like, man, maybe we got this wrong about like Amari being the clear-cut alpha in the middle of this line because Bear looked so good. It's awesome to have two guys of this caliber and two guys that play the position so differently from this group, right? Like Bear is all like his name. He's big. He's strong. He's really hard to move. And when he gets ahead of steam, you're not stopping him. You know, it's a little different than Amari, who's got that quick twitch. But I think they fit really well. It's a good complement of skills. And together, next to each other, like, it should just get better and better from 25 to 26, which is one of the reasons I think there's so much enthusiasm here is, you know, these edge guys, Mateo and Tatum, this will be year 3 starting together. This is just going to be year 2 for these two players and really just their second year being on the same team together. So I think there's a reason to see this really take a step. And I'm really excited to watch what both these guys look like together in 26.
Staying on the outside now, that line of the side of the ball, Tatum Tuioti. A guy that I think is going to be the poster child for Oregon's talk for years to come about development at Oregon within the program. 3-star recruit when he showed up, played significant snaps with 13 games played in 2023, moved into the starting lineup in 2024 and played 14 of 14 games, or started 14 of 14 games played. And then this past season, started 15 of 15 games played for the Oregon Ducks. And quite frankly, I don't know if anyone had it on their bingo card, but he's the guy that continues to probably raise his floor and add extensions to his ceiling every year of, I can do more, I can do more. This is where I'm at. Here's what my potential even expands. And he's turned himself into probably a first-round potential draft pick. Cooper Petegna was on the podcast and said if you really wanted to swap Mateo and put in Tatum in his spot as a first-round draft pick, you would have no issues at all from my end of making that comparison. I just like Mateo a little bit better. A guy that's, I think, got all Big Ten, probably all Big Ten player of the year potential. This side, if he has – the pass rush capabilities, the production, the stat production. He's going to need a lot of help. But if he could have a huge season like that, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
And I don't think it would be from like Mateo either, right? No. You know, and I hate that we always talk about them in tandem, and that's probably a little unfair, but allow me to do it for just a second here. And it's not really a comparison with Mateo as much as it is. I just ran through like it would take inconceivable, I guess, number of sacks this upcoming season for Mateo to be first overall. Mateo's only got 1.5 more career sacks than Tatum. Tatum's at 17. He's 2 off the list just to be on the top 10. And again, he's only 12.5 from first. So he gets 13 sacks in 2020. It's possible. And this would be maybe the case of a really awesome season. And maybe this is a way to kind of measure what a successful season could look like for these guys. But maybe these guys are 1-2 on Oregon's sack career list at the end of the season, you know, and they're competing. Wouldn't that be a fun storyline if they're competing down the stretch in January for jockeying for who's first, who's second? Like that would be, I think, obviously a sign of a very successful season. But yeah, you're right in terms of just the assessment of the career arc and the career trajectory. One of the most kind of like rags to riches cases. And I think probably also just an acknowledgement of like, yeah, sometimes the recruiting rankings don't capture everything. And I know Tony's talked about it. Tatum's talked about it. Like he was not going to camps. Like he was not in the position. He was not out there getting enough evaluation to be seen enough to be like a 4-star prospect. So, you know, he was super productive at Sheldon High School his final season, won a bunch of games, had a bunch of stats. Didn't get that 4-star designation, came in kind of the less heralded he and Mateo. And at this point in their careers, again, like you put their stats next to each other, they're basically a dead heat. So it's fun watching these two guys develop together, but I hope people are appreciating what they are individually as well. And Tatum a year ago outproduced statistically what Mateo did. And then also just from a pure PFF grade perspective, slightly better. He was 83.8 overall. Mateo was 82.2, better on run defense, tied on pass rush, way, way better score on tackles. So, Oregon has two really, really good edge rushers. And again, two guys who could easily both be first round picks coming after this season.
Let's dive into the next tier. These are guys that we anticipate are going to play. They're going to play a lot of snaps for backups this coming season. And there's a lot of expectations that these guys have to be ready to do it. Let's stay in the interior here. De'Andre Robinson, Matt Johnson, Aiden Breland. Those are your top three guys. They all feel like guys that could be potential starters if needed. De'Andre Robinson left a starting job at North Carolina to come to Oregon to be a backup, essentially, where Matt Johnson and Aiden Breland are two underclassmen that have kind of progressed and showed a lot of potential and poise and promise, and now they're being put into a bigger role this season because of departures from the last year's roster.
Yeah, and frankly, all three of these guys, but especially the two younger players, had awesome spring games that I think really changed expectations for this group. And we will soon see whether or not we're doing the thing where we get really excited based upon one data point, and then that data point proves to be not as quite as enticing when we get to counting games. But I think it's pretty easy to see the upside from both of those players. And, you know, I think the reason to buy as opposed to sell those spring game performances is also like, what did we hear about Matt Johnson and Aiden Breland all spring, Matt? It was through the roof, just like, especially with Matt Johnson. It was just like every time anyone talked about him, it was like, this guy is the real deal.
Really, really good.
Yeah. So there's, I think these, it's a fun group because these two young players, like, probably have the ability next year to be the two starting interior linemen if they have solid seasons this year. Now, I'm curious to see, like, Breland in particular, for me, is a point of curiosity because big time recruit, borderline five star. Again, didn't do much his first 2 years in the program. He's now entering kind of a moment where he's expected to contribute. Looked great in the, again, the one time we saw him in April. Will that be who he is all fall? Because the player we saw there was super dynamic athletically, was physically just moving people around, was quick and agile as well. It was everything that was kind of sold of him as a prep player. I'm just curious to see if, like, will that be who he is all season? And I think if that is the case, boy, does Oregon going to be really set up front. And the same story with Matt Johnson, who strangely as the younger player, and maybe I'm weird for feeling this way, feels like more dependable almost, even though I've seen him less. It's just like, maybe it's just because Breland had a full season where we were excited about him in 25. And I think he only played, let's see, I've got the snap counts in front of me here. He only played 60 snaps last season. Like, that's not enough to really have such a few number that you kind of wound up going like, oh, maybe this isn't going to work out. So Johnson to me though, Matt, and I'll throw it to you for him. This is the guy that people are raving about behind the scenes.
Let's go to the outside, the edge spots. Elijah Rushing is the former five-star recruit who's had a slow burn to start his career. 4 games played in 2024. Did play in 7 as a redshirt freshman this past season. Nasir Wyatt was not a five-star, was close to it. And he hit the ground running in a very specific role for Oregon as the pass rush specialist. His challenge is play more consistently in non-third down passing situations. So everyone knows you may not be blitzing. You can't just account, oh, he's on, we gotta be watching where he's coming off the edge. These two guys have a ton of potential, a huge opportunity to play more minutes. And then there's the addition of Tank Jones, a true freshman who was a five-star recruit from the state of Alabama, best player in the state of Alabama. And he's a player that kind of figures to be, I think, this is just me talking here, a lot like a Brandon Dorlus in that he can play on the edge, definitely started out on the edge starting his career. But could maybe potentially grow into someone that in certain situations against certain teams could play in the interior as well.
And we interior and just kind of moving around. No, he's really intriguing, really. The physical intangibles of all the players here, there's a lot to be excited about. Regardless of kind of what the, I guess, the production and development looks like. Like, Elijah Rushing for me is still like maybe the most physically impressive like frame and body type on this defense. Like, he is all of 6'6", probably over 270 pounds now. Got to guess his wingspan is close to 7 feet. I mean, he looks the part. And now, similar to Breland, who I think naturally we grouped together, same class, both of these are the top two players in that 2024 recruiting class, both so physically gifted. Neither of them really have put it together on the field, but I look at Rushing and think like there's so much there still. And you know, he to me physically now looks a lot like Mateo. And that's why I think it's natural to expect him to kind of absorb a lot of the similar, you know, kind of the snaps where Mateo needs a break, feel like those will probably go to Elijah Rushing, assuming he puts it all together. And similar to Breland, coming off a year where it was kind of up and down. I think he played, pull this back up here. I think he played a little bit more than Breland. Yeah, he played 73 snaps, not a lot more, but a dozen more snaps. I think there's a ton of growth potential there. But again, I'm a little bit wary because he hasn't put it together in the past. And then there's Nasir Wyatt, Matt, who I think if we were to poll listeners, is probably the name that I'm almost most excited to see here. Just because it felt like every time he was on the field last year, he was getting a sack. Or he was in the backfield. He finished 3rd on the team in sacks while only playing 42 snaps. I mean, it's just outrageous stuff. His PFF grade is the highest of anybody on the team. Again, super small sample, doesn't qualify, quote unquote, for like, you know, if you were to try to rank the best defensive players because he only played like about 40 snaps. But this is somebody who was so dynamic athletically. and that I look at and say, man, like, what's the next step here? Like, can he get his body to the point where he can play on rundowns and be productive there? Or will his whole career be kind of like, hey, he's going to play, you know, 10, 15 snaps as a pass rusher per game. He's going to wreak havoc. He's going to finish with 8 to 10 sacks a season, but it's going to be, I think the word that Tony Tuioti used was designated pass rusher, DPR. Like, is he just that, or can he become more than that? I think that's the big question for Nasir, and I'm really fascinated to see what that looks like starting this fall.
This next tier now turns into a group of younger players who are going to have opportunities to play, but we're not quite sure if that's going to be this season or if it turns into a down the road, or in some cases as well, it's a guy that was brought on to be like, hey, in this instance, a Jerome Simmons and a Derrick Brown Jr., two transfers that have come in from previous schools. They're interior defensive linemen. I don't think anyone's expecting these guys to push for starter minutes. They're here to fill gaps. They're here to play roles, a very specific role, and to provide depth. But then you've got the other Anthony Jones. You've got Blue Dantzler, who was a standout during the spring game. You've got a Dutch Horsick, a Prince Tavzon. You've got a couple other walk-ons or scholarship guys like a Tony Cumberland, who's injured, that are going to have developmental years for the Ducks in 2026. But that can't say that these guys can't contribute in some capacity. It wouldn't surprise me if one or two of these names pop up and become dudes either this season or down the road for the Ducks.
Let's just quickly on Simmons and Brown. Like, yeah, these are just big bodies. Simmons is like 340 pounds. I think he's the heftiest defensive lineman on this roster. They needed to get some bulk here, yeah, especially when you lose Tion Gray and you lose Terrence Green, and Jericho Johnson. Like, all those guys were like 6'4 to 6'6 of like 330 to 340 pounds. Like, these were just gargantuan interior linemen. Oregon is, I think, collectively more explosive and athletic along the tackle positions, especially with, you know, Amari and Bear are bigger bodies, but like Matt Johnson, Aiden Breland, and even DeAndre Robinson are not these 330, 340 pound builds. Like, these are smaller, more athletic players, but kind of by nature. Simmons provides you just with like, hey, it's third and in inches or fourth and in inches. Let's just put this massive person in the middle of this and let's see if he can, you know, clog up some holes and make it difficult to create any push. So that's what you see with those two players. And I'm with you, Matt. Like, they're not starters. I think they're specialists. I would be probably surprised if either of them hit 100 snaps, to be completely honest, like, based upon what we think of some of these other players. Blue Dantzler, to me, of the rest of the names we ran through, I had literally zero expectations, borderline didn't remember he was a player they had taken until the spring game. And you watch a spring game and he's all over the place. And he's not only all over the place, but he's all over the place against like pretty highly regarded young players like Zaire Addison. He went up against him and Michael Bennett and both of those guys and had some real nice moments. So, you know, I don't know exactly where he fits in all of this, but it feels to me like, other than Nasir Wyatt, of the young edge players, he's probably the most high upside pass rusher right now. Because I think of Rushing and Jones, Tank Jones, being players that you can get pretty excited about, but they're kind of more well-rounded. You know, they may be a little more productive on rundowns. They kind of play a different position. They're more that big end as opposed to that true kind of jack linebacker position that we're seeing employed here. So I'm curious to see what Dantzler is. And I know in looking through what he did at his 1 year at Oregon State, he also had a bunch of sacks in that spring game and then barely played all last year. I don't know if he might not have played at all for the Beavers. Like, is this a spring game specialist who just kind of, you know, goes into hibernation come fall? Or is this a player that is just scratching the surface and you're going to hear from more? I don't know. He in particular, I'm very curious about. I don't necessarily anticipate he's like playing 100 plus snaps, but I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily be surprised if he's somebody who becomes a name we're talking about quite a bit as we get into the bulk of the season.
Yeah, Blue's the one on this roster and this group of tier of players that probably has the best case to move quickly up the depth chart. And I'll be honest, like, can he force his way to the staff having to create some kind of role for him Or was that spring game? We've seen spring games before. I mean, Dylan Gresham the year before, now Gresham's situation was because he got hurt. That's not why he's playing.
So sad.
It's not a lack of production. It's an injury. But we've seen spring game standouts and then absolutely nothing the next season in football.
Yeah.
At Oregon and across the board. And I guess the challenge for Blue is, because you're correct, like, he came so far out of left field that no one had really any high expectations. It was, okay, let's see what he can be. He's a young guy. Give him a couple years, see what he can develop into. And then it was, oh my gosh, he's all over the place. Can you do that consistently? Was that consistent in spring football? And we don't really know that answer.
Well, and then just one other thing here is we kind of, you know, I think we naturally group him with Tatum and Nasir. If Nasir, who played at about a little under 230 last year, Dantzler looks like played a little over 240. I wonder if maybe Dantzler has a little bit more juice on run, just a little more size to play on rundowns, and maybe that's how he carves out a role. Although you very rarely want to take Tatum off the field on those plays either. But I'm wondering if you could find a situation where, like, obviously Tatum is playing whatever 700 plus snaps this season, and then Nasir plays primarily as a pass rusher, and Blue plays primarily on rundowns. I say all that while also acknowledging, like, the spring game was pretty much Blue just being a stud on pass downs. I don't know if he really showed as much as a run defender anyway. So I'm just trying to talk out a possibility where maybe these both players can play kind of a complementary role together. But he's certainly intriguing. And then I guess we should run through these true freshmen really quick. But
yeah,
Anthony Jones is just getting on campus. Don't know much about him in terms of what he looks like. He should be an interior player. Tony Cumberland, I just think at this point, you just don't, you know,
expect a lot from him.
I'm just red shirt. You're probably what we see with him just coming off that injury, that car accident, unfortunately. And then Dutch Horisk was a player that got a lot of praise through spring camp. And I'm kind of curious of, like, I don't anticipate he makes a massive role, but, like, had some nice moments in the spring game, came from a really big program down in SoCal. Maybe he's a player who starts with a higher floor, lower ceiling than some other players, and is just a gamer and ready to be a contributor year one. I don't know. Maybe. And then Prince Tavazan reclassified. So he's a year younger than these other guys. I expect a redshirt year from him.
All right. That's going to do it for us on this edition of the Odds and Audibles podcast. This unit's loaded. They've got a ton of talent. And now it's just finding the depth pieces behind it. I think Eric and I have made it very clear. We think that those pieces are there.
Yeah.
Now the story to watch is just it unfolding and how it emerges and where it comes from. We'll cover it all and track it all on DuckTerritory.com this summer and into the football season. But until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Everything has to come to an end.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus. The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
We from Chicago. It's my home.
From Emmy Award winner Lena Waithe.
There are two types of people in this world. Those that reach for more and those that just enjoy what they got.
This The Chi. Anything's possible.
Singing this song to you.
The Chi, the final season now streaming only on Paramount Plus.